This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. Andrew Pinard's website features videos from the kinds of performances you might expect from a contemporary working magician, entertaining audiences at conventions, business meetings, and here, a group of teens at a post-graduation party. On Saturday, Andrew will take on another guise set in another century. He'll be performing as the 19th century magician Jonathan Harrington at Canterbury's Shaker Village. And Andrew's with us to give us a little bit of a preview and a little bit more on just who this Harrington was. Andrew, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you for having me.
Who was Jonathan Harrington and why choose this guise or this character?
Jonathan Harrington was one of the first native-born American magicians. In fact, in his press material at the time, he often referred to himself as the second ventriloquist in America. He was born in 1811 in Boston, Massachusetts, and he saw his first performer when he was very young and was immediately fascinated by the stage. He was relatively well known, actually, throughout New England over the course of his career.
What was in his act?
Well, he began as a ventriloquist. The first act he saw was a performer who would throw his voice and mimic animals. The performer he saw was Mr. Charles, who was a French performer traveling the United States, and he featured magic as well as ventriloquism. And the young Jonathan Harrington immediately began mimicking the world around him and throwing his voice and startled a lot of his father's business associates with his capability. And he wanted to go on and become a full-time performer, but his father was more interested in having him join the family trade, working in the hardware goods industry. But over time, Harrington prevailed, and in 1826, he actually gave his first performance in a theater. So he was very young, 14 or 15 at the time, and he didn't look back.
Well, this is not your first time channeling a historical figure or a historical conceit, I guess. What is the draw for you of these old characters?
Well, my background is in the theater, and I love to play with story and character. I also have a deep interest in performance history, specifically because I make a career as a magician. I'm very interested in magic history, and I like to look for people, performers who are maybe lesser known, because they were what we used to call them the 40 or 400 milers, the people who used to perform within their local markets. And therefore, they may be referenced in the magic history books, but they're by no means the big names that you would recognize today in the media. So for me, it was interesting to look at a performer who was born locally, who traveled extensively throughout New England and developed quite an extensive reputation in an era before the internet, before substantial media outlets, and in a time when frankly, very difficult to travel. Mm-hmm. And he made a living, a good living, managed to have a small family and buy property outside of Boston in North Chelsea, what is now Revere. And the fact that he worked for P.T. Barnum, the fact that he traveled to Philadelphia regularly for performances, all of that drew me to the type of material.
Do you stay in character the whole time, though, when you're doing this?
I begin with a short talk about Harrington in the context of his performances, and then borrowing a tactic from another performer, a friend of mine who's been doing performances in character for over 40 years now, I wrap my wand three times on the table, and then I transform into Jonathan Harrington. I perform in costume and in character, and I attempt to use as much voice inflection and language of the time.
We're learning a little bit about the history of magic with the contemporary magician, a full-time magician, Andrew Pinard. He is going to be performing this weekend as the 19th century magician Jonathan Harrington. That will be at the Christmas at Canterbury celebration at Canterbury Shaker Village. Three performances, actually, on Saturday. A very interesting time. You are looking at the late 19th century in this case, but the peak of the spiritualist movement in the early 1920s is probably when things kind of came to a head. Spiritualism is something that you've also explored in other productions. Can you tell us a little bit about this?
Sure. I produced, back in 1997, I began performing a series called An Evening with the Spirits. And it was an attempt to explore this world of the supernatural and spiritualism and how oftentimes mediums of the period would deceive people for money. And part of my interest was there were a number of magicians who looked to debunk the spiritualists of the time. The most notable that your audience might be aware of is Harry Houdini, mm-hmm. who did a lot of debunking of spiritualists. Spiritualism truly built up a head of steam around the Civil War when so many men went off to fight and didn't return home, and their family were looking for solace, looking for some way to reconnect with their loved ones after they'd passed on. And the movement continued through the 1930s and 40s and actually saw a resurgence during World War I and World War II. And even today, you can still find people on television who are psychics, who are the spiritualists of today. Unfortunately, most of them are frauds and do more damage mm-hmm. than they ought.
At the time, though, there were some serious scientists who were looking at the science of spirituality, or spiritualism, rather, at the time. Mary Todd Lincoln and Abraham Lincoln apparently attended one of these seances. So there was this stirring in the air, but I'm trying to understand the distinction between the spiritualists, which you've explored, and the illusionists, which were also popular at the time.
Well, Harrington used the phrase natural magic. What he was performing was conjuring. They were tricks. And in fact, he grew up in an era that deep in their memory was the Salem witch trials. And in fact, one of the first magic books was published by a man called Reginald Scott, and the title of the book was A Discovery of Witchcraft. And while most of the book contained information about alchemy and charms and spells and things of that nature, Scott's intent was to demystify the supernatural, or what was purported to be the supernatural. And there was a chapter on juggling. At the time, juggling, a jongleur was a traveling performer who often would use juggling and conjuring and fire eating as a way to entertain people. And often these folks were the first people to actually be burned at the stake mm-hmm. for supposed supernatural capabilities. But as time went on, it did, especially towards the heyday of spiritualism. There were some notable people that you would have not believed would have fallen prey to that type of interest. You mentioned Mary Todd Lincoln, but I also think of Arthur Conan Doyle. Mm-hmm. I mean, Arthur Conan Doyle was an ardent spiritualist, believed throughout his life, and he was friends with Harry Houdini, and who they would have regular passionate discussions about the topic. And yet Arthur Conan Doyle was a creator of Sherlock Holmes, and about logic and reason. And so it's interesting to see. And I think even today, the easiest people to fool are the smartest, the people who have developed a rigid or a sense of logic. I love to perform for engineers and for scientists because they believe that they can't be fooled. However, we take advantage of that rather defined sense of logic to walk around the edges and show them things that can't exist.
So deep in a closet inside of a chest in your house, is there a book of magic tricks full of secrets on how these things are done?
There are over 3,000. Actually, I have an extensive magic library, both on magic history and as well as books on how to perform magic tricks. A lot of people think that magic is all about secrets. It's kind of like that the biggest lie the devil ever told was to believe that there was no devil. Hmm. Magic secrets are very easy to find. The secrets are not the mechanics behind the magic, but rather the context in which they're presented and how you involve audiences to experience something that can't exist.
So that's the illusion. If they're with you, then you have magic. Is that so?
Well, I think in some ways it is conjuring in terms of weaving a spell of enchantment around people. And the term patter is often used for magicians as a rapid fire series of statements to lull audiences into complacency. I'm more interested in kind of setting the ball rolling and let people interpret for themselves what they're seeing. And if they believe that what I've just done is impossible, then I've succeeded.
Well, thank you for grabbing some of the ineffable for us today, Andrew Bernard. Really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Andrew Bernard will be in 3 performances this coming Saturday as the 19th century magician Jonathan Harrington at the Christmas at Canterbury celebration at Canterbury Shaker Village. You can find more information at wordofmouthradio.org.
Got a rabbit in my hat. If you wanna come and see, this is what we'll be. This is what we'll be.
Coming up, breaking down another illusion, the fairy tale princess, when word of mouth continues.
So I slip and begun. Chain me in a box in the river, and rising in the sun. Trust none of what you hear, and less of what you see. This is what we'll be.